Welcome to Service Desk. I'm Kim.
And I'm Sam.
Yay, you did it.
I did. Perfectly this time.
So, Andrew's still traveling. I'm not sure what country he's in, to be perfectly honest. He's somewhere. I don't know. In the world, I assume.
He's somewhere.
I don't think he's done extraplanar travel, so, you know, there's that.
If he has and he hasn't informed us about it, I would be kind of upset.
Right? Yeah. Like, get us in on that, yeah. Bro. Anyway, it's been a while since the podcast has even happened. So, in the last month, I've done a lot of traveling and not a lot of else. Just general work stuff, I guess. Do you have anything exciting tech-wise that you've experienced in the last month?
It's loosely connected with tech, I guess. I've been making some recent job transitions to, I work with, aircraft now. So that's pretty cool. Oh. That's kind of technical.
Yeah. Especially if you're working on computers within the aircraft and not like the fuselage.
They barely fly themselves in. They barely have people fly them anymore. So I'm specifically working with, F-35s. So those are completely computerized now because they literally need the computers to keep them up in the air because they're designed to be innately super unstable and no human can react fast enough to keep them stable in the air. So just to fly, they need the computers.
Well, that's fascinating.
Yeah, it's crazy. There's so much tech inside those.
And I suppose we should probably stop talking about it before like the little red dots appear.
Yeah, maybe a little bit.
Yeah, on my side, it's just been more printer issues with Windows 10, which is not at all exciting and continues to be a pain. But on the software side of it, from my company and the other company that the softwares are trying to communicate through this printer, it sounds like they've at least found something with a DLL somewhere that potentially could be updated or changed to make it better. So
nice.
Yay. People who know what they're doing.
Yeah. I find printers always such a hard thing to get around. For just personal use. My most recent solution is I've set up like a print server to handle all my printing for me. And that removes some of the compatibility issues.
Yeah, because then you just have to be compatible with the server. Yeah. And then whatever gets sent to it can be transferred through versus making all of the computers in your life talk to that printer because they all talk slightly different accents. And sometimes you've got somebody speaking like a good Midwestern accent and a printer that's speaking almost Japanese and like they just don't.
Yep. Or you have one who's talking and the other one's just not listening for some reason.
There's that too. La 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 la, I can't hear you.
Yep. No, it's okay. I'm just going to work on this one print job for 3 hours and do nothing about it, and I'll talk to you later.
Yep, that is also a thing some printers do. So if any of the listeners ever have printer issues, basically you have to do a lot of troubleshooting, or in my case, I ended up just getting a new printer at home because the last one was a pile that didn't want to talk to anything that was wireless.
That's what I did last time. That was fun. I was just like, I'm done with this thing. And it's going to be cheaper to buy a new one than to buy ink for this one. So let's just do it.
Oh, 100%. And yeah, that's why they make them cheap, because the ink is more expensive and they don't care about losing money on the actual printer. But that's all not at all what our topic is tonight.
It was about tech somewhat.
Yeah, whatever. But I understand you said something about good Apple news? What's
Ooh,
this?
Ooh, yeah, good Apple news. So, I'm big into, like, fixing things, right? I fix most of my own stuff and everything. Apple makes that very difficult. But Apple recently just made an announcement that they're reversing their stance on iPhone repairs. So, for the first time in a very long time, Apple will now be certifying independent shops in order to work on Apple devices.
What?
Yeah. So there's a couple of caveats to it. They will not let you work on things that are still covered by warranty. So if it's covered by warranty, you still have to go to the Genius Bar and get the geniuses to figure it out for you. But if it's out of warranty, you can now go to independent third parties that have been, they still have to be in Apple's good books and that sort of thing, but you can get, they are able to now buy parts and service things for you. So.
Oh, that's really good. I heard there was like a third party batteries that were like completely bricking phones or causing some major damage.
There were. That's because buying batteries for Apple products can be a little bit of a shady area. You never know exactly what you're buying. There's a lot of counterfeit batteries out there.
That doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, and also buying them in the first place is very difficult because a lot of them get tied up in U.S. customs, and especially if you live in the U.S., they're not able to get into the country most.
Interesting.
So now being able to buy things directly from Apple and stock things is a good thing.
Right, and hopefully Apple realizes that, hey, if we sell parts, we'll make money off of that as well and continue.
Yep. A really good side effect of this, though, is that Best Buy's Geek Squad, all of them will be third-party Apple repair.
Well, that's
so
handy.
You can go to Geek Squad and have the Geek Squad figure it out for you.
I mean, genius to geek. I don't, I guess.
Well, if you're asking me, I would go down some like dark alley to this little guy who just has like a soldering iron and a heat gun. So
yourself, you
maybe yep.
I hope you're not just in a dark alley with a solder. Great, now I have pictures of you with like a hooded cloak and like
yeah,
hey kid, you need your iPhone repaired?
Well, that's kind of how I am in my daily life. Often when people have issues with their cell phone, I'm like, well, you know, it's because of your battery. It's just old now. You want to replace that? I got a heat gun. We can do that. So, but yeah, that's my good Apple news. And I think it's really good news.
Yeah. And keeping up with the phone news, we had reported, like we do when you do actual reporting here, talked about Samsung was building a phone that was big enough to fold so that they could have a larger screen size, basically. And on first testing, their phones were breaking really easily. Like the plastic sheet that was over the top of them, there was a layer that you could peel back that if you peeled it off would completely destroy the phone,
the screen.
And so they have now taken that and like actually tucked it within the chassis of the body so that you can't peel it off. And then the other issue was that it was like the hinges were breaking when you folded them. And so they've made the hinges sturdier and less prone to dust and debris. So like the huge issues they have now at least addressed. So it might be a more viable possibility going forward. I still don't see people dropping $2,000 on it, but that's me.
Yeah, well, we'll see. You know, people are always trying to innovate because to differentiate your phone in the modern market is really difficult. So,
yes,
you know, they're all very good now. So there's not much of a decision to be made.
It's basically Apple versus everything else.
Yeah. you know, a lot of people, you know, you're looking,
well,
you're buying either Apple or Samsung.
It's very true. Or Pixel. I'm a Pixel person.
Yeah. I was surprised at how little of a market share they actually have, though. They're gaining in popularity, but I'm very happy with mine, too.
It's good stuff.
Yeah, I'll just sell my whole life to...
You don't have to sell your life. You just, you know, tell them all the things you're doing.
All the time.
And then they'll sell your life for you.
It's true.
So speaking of selling things, tonight we're going to talk about how credit cards work.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of technology that goes into every credit card transaction that is not nearly as up to date as I thought it was.
Yeah. it's a really interesting, antiquated system, really, especially in if you're dealing in the United States. Things are maybe a little bit better overseas in the EU, but we still have a very interesting kind of landscape for credit cards in the US.
So let's start with the basics. So I walk into a store and I get my stuff and I go up to the register and I do my thing and they're like, it's $18.50, and I hand them my credit card.
Mm-hmm.
So how does that basic, I just slide my credit card, how does that work?
So with it, a credit card reader, especially when you're sliding it, when you slide a credit card, it's called what's called a mag stripe. So how that works is just it has bars of magnetic material that a little reader can pick up and interpret that into then binary. Just to get a number.
Okay.
And what that feeds to the credit card reader is literally the number that is on your card.
Interesting.
Yeah, there's not a lot special about it. It literally just goes, oh, this is the number. So that's how the reader
works. It's just a number? It's not like your name or your...
So the name is not transmitted. The three bits of information most often transmitted in most cases are the full number, the expiration date, and the security code.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
So the security code's on the magstripe,
too? On some of them. It depends on some of the cards. There's, for a standard system, a lot of them are not very standard. So,
well,
yeah, it's weird. So, like, all of them will at least send the expiration date and the number, the credit card number.
So where does it send them?
So in a lot of cases, at least in the U.S., just... on the telephone, just landline phone.
So they don't even need to be plugged into like an Ethernet port?
No, just plug it into the phone line and, you know, make an old phone call to the credit card company and you just send that with some beeps and boops. yep.
Okay, so literally the little machine in front of me, all it's doing is taking my number.
And then yelling at the credit card company.
Is it?
Yep.
I assume it's like a computer or something on the other end that's like, yep, this is a thing.
Yeah, it is. It is.
What comes back from the credit card company to say that you're good to go?
So what comes back is literally just an approval message. So it goes, yep, you're good to go. And that's how the merchant knows that the transaction went through. Because on the back end, at least, they don't receive the money straight away. It's when you set up a merchant account with whatever your payment provider is, they will then pay you after the fact for that. Yeah.
Gotcha. So from the consumer side, all it does, send the number to the company. Company says, yep, they're good for it. And That's all there is.
They just send confirmation that your card is good.
That's, well, at least like my social security card and my like mother's maiden name and all that stuff aren't out there. That's kind of comforting.
Yeah, at least if you weren't in the big leak a couple years ago. But yeah, with it, yeah. That's a very good point, though. It does, in a lot of cases, just yell that completely unencrypted across phone lines. So...
We'll get to security in a second. So do chips basically do the same thing?
No.
Or is there something more?
Chips are far more complex. So every chip and PIN card that you have is a completely unique chip.
Oh.
So what the chip does is it has its own cryptographic signature, which it uses to generate basically a transaction. It will use that chip to do the calculation for that transaction. And on the other end, the credit card company, knowing also what the secret for that chip is, will also calculate that. So unless you have that exact chip, the two will not match up and that transaction can't go through.
So that sounds like a gajillion times more secure.
Oh, it's a million, million gajillion times more secure. And that's why back almost a decade ago now, Europe switched over to chip and PIN altogether.
Yeah, I've had a lot of people be like, hey, I got my chip card today. And then my European friends will be like, what?
Yep. So
what do you mean you're just getting one?
I know. We mandated in the US that companies change over to it. But the thing is that we didn't make it mandatory that they change over to it. We just made it so that they can no longer claim insurance if those transactions are stolen. So a lot of companies have been dragging their feet on it, especially if you deal with, say, smaller banks or credit unions.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
like I deal myself with a local credit union, and I only got my chip card, what, a month and a half ago?
Oh, jeez.
So, yeah.
And this was supposed to have been in effect for a few years now, right?
Yeah, the better part of 2 years, almost three now.
Wow. So they're just rolling the dice on those.
Yep. But it's a much more secure, a way better system, because not only does it verify that you have the physical chip, but the calculation takes into effect that you're using the correct PIN, right? So you have to have some private knowledge that you have and some secret knowledge that only that card could have.
That would make sense.
It's very cool system. And I think it's very much worth it for the extra, 2 seconds it takes on your transaction?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I think it's cool to, I just think it's really cool because it looks really good on your card.
Oh,
too.
It does.
Very futuristic.
I know. It's all high tech.
So, like, let's talk about the devices themselves, too.
Okay.
So we have, you know, you go into your store and you have your Verifone, mm-hmm. whatever kind of thing. Or then there's places that have, one of my favorite coffee shops uses Square.
Okay.
And then another one uses ShopKeep.
Yep.
And these other, like, one had an iPad that literally just had, like, a little thing shoved in the the whatever lightning adapter mm-hmm. port. They swipe my card through. So, like, what does it really take to run these kind of things?
So,
like, do I need to be worried about iPad devices?
You could be, for sure. So with it, if you look at, say, with those iPad-like devices, a lot of those, you mentioned Square. Mm-hmm. If you look, Square offers a couple of different models for its Square reader, right? It has, mm-hmm. There's like USB-C ones and there's lightning adapter ones. There's also 3.5 millimeter headphone jack ones.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And what that is it's just a simple reader that, especially in the case of the 3.5 millimeter headphone jack, when you swipe it, it does the same thing that it does in a store. Your card just screams over your microphone, hey, this is the number on this card. So, yeah.
I'm forever going to have this picture of cards now screaming every time I run them through.
If you've ever heard a credit card transaction over a phone line, because you can actually just listen to them, it's like old school, like modems talking. They just scream across the internet.
That's great. I love it.
But there are some security concerns with those. It's how much you actually trust the device, right? If the device itself is compromised, then that transaction could be compromised.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
But that's the same case for any of the readers. Even the physical readers in the store, you know, those can be compromised in many different ways.
Interesting. So how do you compromise a physical device? Like, will I know that it's compromised when I look at it?
Not necessarily. It's a kind of, it's a pretty scary world for a lot of people now in this case, because like you've got your three main ways of transmitting a credit card transaction. You've got RFID, which is radio frequency identification. So those are those cards that like you tap, or you're doing like your Apple Pay on your cell phone or Google Pay, any of those sort of things.
Mm-hmm.
You also have swipe transactions and you have chip and PIN transactions. With it, if you're using something like Apple Pay or Google Pay or chip and PIN, a lot of the time you actually don't have to worry about the machine being compromised because those cryptographically sign things and you can't recreate that transaction again. But But especially for swipe transactions, those can be compromised in just so many ways. So they can put They can put little like shims inside the port. So it's literally tiny little pieces of miniaturized hardware that can fit in the same card slot so that as you're swiping it and the machine is reading it, their hardware is also reading it. And that will just get them the number and the expiration code and all of that sort of thing. A lot of the time they pair that with, say, like a little hidden like a button camera so that as you're doing that, they can also pick up that you're typing on the keypad what your PIN is.
Oh, that wow. Okay. I didn't know that was a thing.
Let's see. There's a lot of times, there's been a lot of cases actually where places will be compromised by there are unattended, especially in like retail situations, there are unattended registers and they'll just swap out the reader. You know, you just go in, you plug in your own reader instead of theirs and there you go. Now it's yours.
Interesting.
Yeah, a lot of the time, some of them are, there are better ones than others, right? In some cases, you can be using an ATM and the little thing you put your card into, if that wiggles at all or is loose, it could be a sign of tampering. Things, if they just look shady, could be a sign of tampering. It's a really rough landscape because there's a lot of people, it's really easy to access this hardware. Anybody can buy it for very little money and start trying to steal credit cards.
Well, interesting.
Yeah. Also, RFID is pretty crazy for stealing because you can steal things from a couple feet away in some cases with it being in your wallet. So that's fun.
And that's why they have like the RFID blocking wallets.
Exactly. It's just getting an RFID reader close enough to where your wallet or your bag is so that you can then talk to that card.
Which the RFID technology in general is really fascinating to me. Like the inventory systems that utilize it, I think are really fascinating and useful. Yep. But
I love RFID.
But yeah, being within like what 20 feet of a card and you can theoretically read it. Or do they have a shorter range?
No, it's usually a much shorter range. So, like, if you've ever tried to use, like, an RFID reader to, say, pay for something, usually you have to tap your card to the reader, right? So you're talking usually a couple of inches, up to a foot in some cases, but that's pretty rare. But what that means, basically, is somebody can be holding a reader and bump into you in a crowd, and they then have the number, you know?
So if you get patted on the butt when you're at Gen Con, maybe.
Yeah, for sure. I think you've got more concerns in that situation than having your credit card stolen. But
That did not happen to me.
Crowded bus or train or something, you know, standing in line in a store and somebody walks by you and bumps into you. Those sort of things.
Things that you wouldn't necessarily see as being a stealing situation.
Yeah. It just reads the card just like anything else would. The new Apple card does get around that though.
The titanium card. I saw somebody did like really cool engraving on their card.
Yeah. That's great. They're also stained by jeans and leather wallets. So that's great. It'll look like garbage if you wear jeans. So.
You know.
But that's a really cool system though. For every transaction, it generates a new unique credit card number for the transaction, so it can't be recreated. Wow. So it's only good for the one transaction, even if they steal that transaction.
Doesn't matter. That's fascinating.
Yeah, it's a very cool system.
More good Apple. I know. News. What?
I know.
Good job, Apple.
It's only made out of precious metals for a thing that you'll replace every 2 years. And it stains in your pants, but security-wise, it's really cool.
Details.
It sounds like a lot of doom and gloom, though, right? Talking about the security stuff, it's kind of scary.
Security in general scares the crap out of me when I get to digging into it too far. Yep. So
I do have some good news for you on that case.
Okay.
Yeah. Don't worry about it. There's a lot of situations where you go, okay, you need to be secure and you need to be proactive about it. The fact is, though, within the credit card industry, most numbers are already stolen.
Yeah.
In a lot of cases, your number is stolen before you even receive it in the mail.
Oh, yeah. Oh, good. Okay.
So,
why?
Just because sometimes there's weaknesses in number generation. Like, for instance, what, back 3-4 years ago, you could predict what number somebody would be issued in American Express cards before they even got it. So, like, say you stole their credit card number and they then called and they were like, oh, this is stolen. And the number and the card was then canceled and they reissued them a new card. You would then be able to use some math in order to go, okay, this is the next card that they're being given. So you already have that.
Dang.
So there's stuff like that out there.
Well, I suppose there are only 16 digits and the first four are taken by which version of the credit card company you're using. So
and,
that would
and
sense.
Say, for instance, like a lot of institutions, they like to keep you with some of the numbers the same. Like from my credit union, the last four cards I've had have had the exact same last four digits on the last four cards. So it's just figuring out the rest of them. Also, there are so many compromised readers that it's just insanity. Like just out in the wild, you probably everybody on a daily basis encounters some sort of compromised reader.
Huh.
Yeah. It's so prolific out there.
Well, I suppose if you can get the technology real cheap and anybody with two brain cells that knows that exists.
Yep. So you don't really need to be worried about it because it's already been stolen. And with it, right, the likelihood of your card being stolen is just random chance. Because all these people who steal them, they sell them to these big credit card repositories that then malicious people just try and use, right? So, sure. So it's literally just random chance whether or not yours is used or not. And in like 80% of cases, it's resolved by you going to the credit card company. And since they already know it's such an issue, a lot of the time they will just write that off, right? Their insurance will cover.
Gotcha.
So you don't need to worry about it.
Because the credit card companies ultimately will take it.
They'll take the hit.
In the shorts.
Yep. They will take the hit, especially if it's smaller transactions. Because most transactions by, nefarious people are under $10. And in the credit card industry, at least, they'll comp anything with no questions asked under $20. So, you don't need to worry about it as a person, whether or not it's compromised, because it's already been stolen. And you will get your money back, no problem.
Good to know.
Yep.
Well, this has been fascinating. I don't know if I'm happy or not, but knowledge is knowledge.
Knowledge is knowledge.
I'm glad I have some.
And it's really cool. If you know what you're looking for, you can see a lot of compromised stuff out there, and it's really ingenious what they've got out there.
I bet.
It's pretty cool.
Your definition of cool, maybe.
Hey, being able to go, hey, I found it, and now I own this thing? That's pretty cool, right?
Well,
I just got a free button camera out of this. Cool,
awesome.
64 gigabyte, micro SD card. Nice. don't put that in your computer. Don't take that advice. That's bad. Don't put random SD cards in your...
How would you clean an SD card if you found, if you had something important on it? That's a whole nother podcast. Never mind. I'll bring you back. You can talk about it later.
No problem.
So, where can we find you on the internet, Sam?
You can see me not talk on Twitter at SamSlot007.
I haven't even seen rat pictures recently.
Yeah. Twitter was becoming a little bit too much for me. So, I mostly just lurk now. But yeah, you can find me anywhere on the internet at SamSlot007. And I'm part of the Beholder's Eye podcast with Kim here.
Excuse me?
Yeah.
What did you just call it?
Well, I was referring to it as a thing. It's Beholder's Eye podcast. Just so that Alex doesn't reach through my computer and strangle me. The is part of the proper sentence to refer to a thing.
I
know. Went to school and did English stuff. But yeah.
I'm just giving you crap because there's so many times when I'm on other podcasts and I have to say, I'm Kim from Beholder's Eye. And yeah.
But you can find us on Twitter at Beholder's Eye Pod or online at BeholdersEyeCast.com.
Indeed. Yep. And if you liked what you heard here, you can go to patreon.com/servicedeskpodcast and get some awesome perks like a sticker if you go to the $5 level and early releases and all kinds of little audio extras of stupid things we say. And then if you don't have the cash, if you appreciate us going to iTunes or any of those lovely pod places that you can review things and leaving us a 5-star review. And then if you just want to interact, we're available. We have our Twitter, Facebook, and website. You can search Service Desk Pod and find us in all those places. Or, if you want to submit your own question, you can go to servicedeskpodcast@gmail.com and we will potentially make an entire episode out of it. As always, I'm Kim.
And I'm Sam.
We are your techie friends.